This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of June 24th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a wet Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen. How's it going, dude?
I'm dry.
No, you're not.
What do you mean? No, I'm not. Mr. What do you, who made you, Mr.
You're mushy.
Interrupt you and contradict me. That's my job. You put me out of work, dude.
I don't think so. We won't get into how people raise their children, but my parents knocked me in the head when I interrupted, but apparently that didn't happen in the Allen household.
No, that happened to my brothers.
It's all good. At least I know how to handle it.
Be quiet, Jim's talk.
Yeah, well, I had a matriarch for mother, and I had a spoiled bratty sister, so I've been interrupted quite a lot in my life.
All right, so you know the drill. Let's get to it.
All right, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Bo Takahashi of Seibu. We talk potential MVP candidates, look at some stats, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
So I ventured out to the Lions' home ground recently and waited to talk to 27-year-old Brazilian right-hander Rodrigo Hitoshi Bo Kaimoti Takahashi of Seibu. And yes, he's from Brazil. He's from the
São Paulo area, which
is a
hotbed of baseball in Brazil.
Yeah, he's from the São Paulo area. Yes, that's right. And obviously he has Japanese family ties. He's in his third season in NPB after a short stint in the KBO. And he has family, Japanese family, living in the Aichi area. And Jim talked to him, I guess it was two seasons ago that you did that.
Last year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Bo talked about pitching in front of family members in Nagoya. And what a fun story that was. That was a really good interview, and I talked to him about it, and he actually couldn't remember the exact city his family, in which his family lives out there in Aichi Prefecture, but he's sure that it's Aichi Prefecture. And why would he know, right? You don't go out there that often, and that's not a city on the Pacific League stop every year. They just happened to play in Nagoya this year, but Bo said that his family wasn't able to go out there and see him, and you'll hear that in the interview. But Bo pitched in the Diamondbacks organization and went to the KBO in 2021, came to Japan the next year, and he earned the opportunity to start this season. And he has been strong, I think, in a crowded and talented rotation, and he's pitching fairly well. He pitched really well early on, but if you don't get hung up on the wins and the ERA, he's doing really well, keeping the team in the game and giving the opportunity for the Lions to win some of these games. They just haven't been able to score very much. So that's pressure on everybody, not just one person in particular. But Bo speaks Portuguese and Spanish, and he speaks English, obviously, because we had a really good chat, and he's working on his Japanese, he said. But let's take a listen to Bo in English.
All right, so joining us again today is Bo Takahashi of the Lions. Thank you for taking the time.
No, thank you guys for having me.
Oh, man, I just really enjoyed your whole story last time.
Appreciate it. Hopefully you
have another good story. So tell me, how did you end up becoming a starter this year after being in the bullpen for so long?
So pretty much I've been starting my whole career in USA as a minor leaguer, and I played a couple months in South Korea as well as a starter. So since I came here, I was being a reliever the first 2 years, but this year, finally, I'm happy to be a starter again. So I'm kind of like happy to be back for sure.
How did you make that push? What did you do?
Oh, actually, it was like both decisions, like for me and the team. So the team came up with the idea, and I'll just like embrace it. It was like, let's do it.
So what's the biggest adjustment for you in terms of in Japan? Because I know everything is different, but in Japan, being a starter and
I feel like pretty much the hitters, like over here you're seeing like a lot of hitters with a lot of contact, so it's pretty much like it's tougher to get some strikeouts, but like thanks God I had the first 2 years, so pretty much I got more experience, I have like more feeling of this, so this year I'm just getting like the whole experience, like I had it first 2 years in American South Korea, just like getting just trying to do my best on the mound.
So you guys played in Nagoya for the first series in Interleague?
Yes.
So was your family able to attend some of the games over there?
So I didn't pitch on the game, but I think they didn't make it because it was like a weekday.
Yeah, they were.
So that was kind of busy, yeah.
And they missed because you guys won the series.
Yes, we did.
So no, that's all right. So now we've heard a lot about the baseball this year. It's not carrying as much as it had in the past. How do you feel about the ball as a pitcher?
For me, I really didn't see the difference at all. For me, it pretty much feel like the same thing as last year and the year before. But for me, like feeling-wise, I'm feeling really, really good with the baseball. Like I say, like my pitches, it's better with more speed. You know, and like I don't know if it's the baseball or it's like the practice I had it is spring training and everything and like into today, but for me it feels good, like really good.
So now the wins are not coming for you, but the results are pretty good for you. How do you feel about your performance?
No, I'm pretty sure the wins will come for sure. Like we just gotta keep playing hard, like playing great. So I think the wins will come for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's you guys and Chunichi, the Dragons, having trouble, the most trouble scoring according to the run production.
Mm-hmm.
So how much do you think about that pressure, you know, of holding the other team to a zero?
The hitters, of course, everybody had like a bad day. So I'm pretty sure they are working on it. And I'm pretty sure like the runs will come and the wins will come as well. But everybody got a bad day, but we just gotta keep doing our jobs. Like pitcher-wise, you just gotta be scoreless on the mound and just keep going from there.
Yeah, I had a pitcher before tell me it's my job to make sure the other team doesn't score.
Yes.
So my job doesn't change.
Yes.
Whether we score runs or we don't score runs, the job doesn't change.
Every time we got on the mound, we gotta be 120% there, execute the pitches, and get up the mound and score us for sure.
Now, recently, you guys also had a managerial change. Matsui's gone, and now a former pitcher is down, and he's the manager. So what's the mindset when that happens, when the manager is out and you have a new one?
I think for me, my mindset will be the same. Like, just keeping working hard. Every time I come to the field, I just do everything I can every day. Pretty much, my mindset is like, what I can do today to be better than yesterday. So I think if I keep up this mentality, I think I'll be way better. So just keep grinding, keep working hard.
Now, what has changed under the new manager?
I think, of course, it's not common, it's not normal, but we just have to do our thing.
I mean, he's obviously a different personality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a former pitcher as opposed to Matsui was a former position player.
Yeah, for sure. So pretty much we gotta be more, how to say, we gotta pitch better.
Yeah.
I know, of course, we're humans, we're always gonna be 100%, but we gotta do whatever we can to keep doing our job.
All right, now you pitched in the KBO.
Yes.
And you've been over here for a few seasons now. What's the difference between the South Korean players and Japanese players in terms of the level?
I think both countries are really good at baseball. And I think they have a rivalry going on that too. But I think here, like, they have more players, more foreign players as well. So I think both bases are really good. Like, I really can't say which one is the difference, which one is better or not. But I think both are really good. But here, you have more players like with power, more players with more contact. Especially like features wise, you got like real society from Frank Gaz over there. But here, I think here, like, they do a really good job as well.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's an emphasis on some aspects of the game that's a little bit different in Korea than it is in Japan. In Japan, like, the defense is really...
Yeah, I think here, like, Japan plays like more like bunch the ball and everything, and Korea, they do as well, but I think they have like more, maybe a little bit more Americanized,
but
both styles are really awesome to watch.
Okay.
I really enjoy watching those games, so I'm really...
All right, last question. We always try to ask a little bit about the mounds, and you're playing in interleague now, so you can maybe pitching on some different mounds. But how are the mounds generally in Japan?
Like for me, for my mounds here in Japan in general, for me it's been amazing. Like I really didn't have a trouble at all. I feel really really comfortable with all those mounds, especially in even on the countryside games. Like I really enjoy it because it's kind of similar from where I grew up playing baseball. So kind of like. Brings me a little bit of flashback from like pitching on the mound, like where I came from. Like it's not like what I can say, major league level. So it's like a little soft, a little more hard. But for me, it's been amazing.
You have a favorite one?
I think of course home.
No.
Yes. for me, since like we hear a lot, we practice a lot, so I'm kind of like used to here. But for sure, like. Of course, we gotta be ready for any type of mound, but I think for me, home is the perfect mound. Sure.
All right, our listeners really enjoyed your story, especially me. So we're always rooting for you.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Stay healthy.
Thank you.
All right.
Great attitude. What stuck with you? Thanks again, too, Bo.
Yeah, that was really fun, and I think there's a couple of things, and you know. I think, of course, well, as soon as I heard this, you know, you're not getting wins and losses. And I'm saying, yeah, well, whenever I think I wrote in my blog that was supposed to be Saturday that came out Sunday by accident because the internet didn't cooperate.
The internet was interrupting you?
It was indeed. It was preceding you. And the, I'll lay it on thick when I can. I was thinking that Chihiro Sumida on Saturday got the greatest gift the Lions can give a pitcher, runs.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't happened a lot. It's pretty much a desert. Cebu's a run desert. And but I did like his attitude. And I think that's really important because, you know, I think I'm going to be the one talking about teams and such instead of you for a change, but you know, you have to trust your teammates. I mean, you can't be worrying about what your teammates are and aren't doing. You just have to assume that they're going to carry, you know, they're going to do their utmost and have your back.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, then you end up as a team, a couple of options. One, you end up with a team that doesn't care because nobody else is playing for the team, which we saw famously with the 2005 Yomiuri Giants. We had a bunch of guys had a lot of good stats, but a team that was going in 8 different directions at once.
True.
Okay.
But all of them going downward.
And the team going downward, right. Yes. I mean, some good individual performances from Tuffy Rhodes and Hiroki Kokubo and Shinosuke Abe, but the team was completely unmanageable. That was because of the manager. And Tsuneo Horiuchi. But the other thing is, and the same thing is, you have to trust your teammates. And another example of that is like the 2005 Rock 10 Eagles, were a team that, you know, they set up a record for most losses, but they just played worse than they should have. Every player had a feeling that if he wasn't better than he really was, if he wasn't able to hit that ball he normally couldn't hit, they weren't going to win. So what happened was everybody was worse than they should have been. So we have a situation, or you know, in it, that's one outcome where everybody's just out for themselves, and there's another situation where everybody feels like the only way the team can win is they are better players than they are and able to play, not stay within their core competences, and they're trying to do too much, and then they get worse. So we saw that with the 2005 Rock 10 Eagles. but there's an expression in the military. It's called unit cohesion. And it's basically an attempt to measure how many poor or adverse outcomes a group of individuals can suffer and still remain effective. And when you're taking losses like the Lions have been, you know, at what point do people start thinking, you know, not looking for exit strategies, but start thinking, oh, the other guys aren't going to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's really the thing. And the key part of that is trusting in your teammates. So as long as, you know, they can maintain that trust, and as long as they can maintain that trust in the organization and in the manager and in the coaches, then turnaround is always possible. So I like his attitude. I think the Lions probably made their managing change because they felt that the players, they felt somebody was not, maybe they were the ones who weren't confident in Kazuo Matsui. I don't know. But I watch Hisanobu Watanabe on the bench thinking, why did I take this job?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
He's like, he looks so bright and chipper on day one and two. And now he's going like, I got caffeine headaches every day.
Yeah. Caffeine and nicotine headaches.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. There's a quotient out there that, you know, at what point do you say, hey, we've got to fall back here as a soldier and we can't win this battle here. And how often that starts, or how much more often we see those instances in games in which maybe they fall behind by a couple of runs in the middle of the inning. I'm sorry, in the middle of the game. And they don't seem to be able to get over the hump, and the pitchers say, well, here's another instance where we're not going to get any runs, and they give up more runs. I mean, we could see that happen. I don't know. I really have not noticed that, because I always think about the players and their desire to get off the field when they're out there. And I think that stays high whether you're a losing team or a winning team, because you don't want to be out there for a long time playing defense. So that's one thing that I guess, as you guys might tell, my voice is a little bit different. I'm playing a little bit hurt, caught one of these summer colds, as they call it. Right at the start of rainy season out here. So I'm playing hurt today, but I'll push through. I do agree with Bo saying everybody has a bad day, but those bad days are piling up into bad weeks and bad months here.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's a bad team, maybe a great team in terms of, you know, what everybody's giving team spirit. But in terms of quality, it's not a good team.
It's a bad stretch. Yeah. And, you know, I believe in the notion that whether or not the offense produces, that it's not okay to get knocked around as a pitcher. You still, you know, if you get three runs in the third inning, you still have to get outs. And that's what I told him. The job still doesn't change. Your job as a pitcher is to go out and get outs without giving up runs. So whether you have those runs on the board or not, I understand. But trying to keep game, you know, he says, you know, we got to keep it scoreless. And I'm like... No,
well, that's trying too hard.
No. But he said, but in his, I'm sure he meant we got to keep the other team scoreless.
Sure.
But what it came across to me as, well, we got to keep the game scoreless. We know we're not going to score a lot of runs. So we've got to keep, you know, 0-0s until we come out of the game, whenever that is. And then hope we can get a run is the way it came across to me. But I mean, that's just, you know, me probably overanalyzing something, but. As far as what he said, he came along in his career as a starter, and he's returning to the starting position or starting role. And I would venture to say we didn't know what we might see. And I would think at, what is it, his ERA is around 3.5, and he's keeping the team in the games. I think he has had some of his runners who were inherited score and when he was off the mound. So that's another reason why his ERA is kind of on the highish side. But look at the challenge he had coming out of camp. He had Tatsuya Imai, you had Kona Takahashi as the two front, you know, top guys. You had Chihiro Sumida, you had rookie Natsuki Takeda, who, by the way, has the lowest
Kaima Taira.
Takeda. Yeah, well, let me finish. Takeda, who at the moment has the best ERA among starters, and yes, Kaima Taeda. And so he had all those guys to go up against. And I believe Wataru Matsumoto was battling for that sixth slot, but Matsumoto eventually raised his hand when the team said, we need another arm in the bullpen to bridge, you know, the gap between the middle relievers and the back of the bullpen. And so he went to the bullpen, although he hasn't been great. But, you know, Matsumoto hasn't been great in that role, but Takahashi has been a very credible starter. So I'm impressed with what he has been able to do. And hopefully the Lions can score a few more runs and get his record situated so that it doesn't look so bad. But, you know, there's the way that team is not scoring and looking worse than, I mean, I'm looking around at offenses throughout NPB, and there are only a few that have the consistency in scoring that you can count on. The other teams are all struggling offensively. So,
yes,
it's not just the Lions, but
no, it is not.
Yeah. Or the Dragons, but it's,
but as Watanabe said, you know, we got to do something, because if your whole plan is hope the four, geez, it was like what we said in the PL preview. It was like, this is the first year because of the pitching. I said this is the first year where the Lions' plan wasn't let's keep Taki Nakamura standing so he can play like he did a few years ago. And the other day, Hisanobu Watanabe said, you know, I don't mean to be mean, but right now they don't have Shuta Tonosaki. He's been out for a little while. And he said, if your plan is let's hope the 40-year-old guys, Nakamura and Takumi Kuriyama, stay healthy and produce, that's not a plan.
No. Well, it's a plan. To
says the general manager.
Yeah. Who put the team together, ostensibly, yes.
Ostensibly, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, we thank Bo again for his time.
Thanks, Bo.
And the interesting comments, and hope to talk to him again. Let's make a smooth transition or a seamless transition to MVP candidates. I don't know how smooth the transition is going to be, but I was looking around for early candidates, and I thought about a couple of guys in the Pacific League. But on my own, I couldn't come up with anybody in the Central League, although I have a strong candidate, but I know that the Japanese media doesn't even see this guy. He's invisible at the moment. So do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I got only, you know, I'm looking around, I'm going, the only guy I see who's an MVP, well.
Which candidate? Know, which
well,
league?
Well, Pacific League is the candidate, who's Kensuke Kondo.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious. I mean, it's like he's playing in sort of in his own league.
he is, and
everybody else is kind of. It's almost like the balls with the thin fraying threads. They say, "Hold on, Kondo's coming up to the plate. Give that pitcher one of those balls that actually work."
Oh gosh,
I know you hate it, but I'm just saying what people are telling me, and on the obvious thing, which is what. Everybody can see from the numbers, but no, he's playing like everything's normal. You know, he's having that. You know, Takeya Nakamura did that. Speaking of the devil, did that in 2011 when they changed the ball, and he was like the only one who. Well, he was a pull hitter, and he just kept with his style. He didn't have to change anything. And he had a career year, and a year when nobody could hit home runs. So that's what this reminds me of. He's found ways to lock into what he can do, despite the fact that the ball is not carrying as well as it had.
So I had also Kondo of the Hawks, and I had obviously Yuki Yanagata before he was injured. And I don't think he was a front runner, but he was obviously a candidate. And I thought Hotaka Yamakawa had been playing well enough to be a candidate. I don't think he was a front runner, obviously. So I had Kondo, but obviously we had another player emerge. I don't think this player, as young as he is, can continue playing this way. But Shun Mizutani, who, and I hope the powers that be have been listening to JBW, and that's why they made Shun Mizutani of the Fighters the Interleague MVP. Congratulations to him. But of course, he hit like a monster, so you couldn't ignore what he had done.
Yeah, he was really the best player in Interleague. I mean, there was
right.
That was a good one. Yeah, I mean, that was one where the batting average actually reflected more or less what he did. I mean, it wasn't a heavy 438, but geez, you don't have to have a heavy 438.
Yeah, you hit over 400, and you know what I noticed is I've kind of been complaining about Shohei Ohtani because that's what fans of a team do, even though he's having another MVP type season. But he doesn't seem to produce. Ohtani doesn't late in games. A lot of his hits come early in games, and then he kind of goes to sleep. Maybe he'll get a single with runners on base in certain situations, but for the most part, he's a strikeout victim in late game situation. Mizutani here in Japan has been different. He has been very productive in late inning situations, and especially in interleague. And so that's why I say I don't think he can continue this, because he's essentially coming out of nowhere. And I did mention that I had seen him in a farm game earlier this year, and I thought, that guy is an interesting player. But he's, you know, he's stiff. He walks kind of, I said this before, he walks like Lurch. He's not a smooth, fluid athlete, very different from Manami, but he's hitting pitches on the outside. He's hitting pitches on the inside part of the plate. He's hitting pitches down in the zone. He's hitting pitches up in the zone. It's hard to get the ball past him in this stretch that he's experienced. So I don't see that lasting, but I do see pitchers throwing different, attacking him in different areas of the play, or trying to, because they don't always hit their spot pinpoint. So I'm going to put him up there and hope that he can, obviously make a push. And assuming that he will regress to the mean, as they say, at some point, he won't be. But I'm going to certainly put him on the radar here and watch what he does. What about the Central League?
I don't have anybody. Maybe Koji Chikamoto, the Tigers.
You don't have anybody?
Yeah, he's the guy. He's the closest I've got to a candidate. Everybody's just so compacted. I mean, I don't really see. It's not like
I
it's
do.
Not like there's somebody jump. Oh, well, go ahead.
Then, I see a guy jumping off the page.
And oh yeah, you tell me.
It's Domingo Santana.
I don't see that.
Great numbers.
Okay.
You don't see that? Okay.
No.
You've got 11 home runs. So that's what, third in the league. His batting average is .316. That leads the league. He's moved into a tie for first for RBIs last night. And with teammate Jose Osuna, that's at 38. He leads the league in hits. That's 73. Cool. He's second in doubles at 17. Top 10 in walks. Third in runs as of Sunday morning. That's MVP.
Yeah, that's what you call, he's the MVP if the team wins the league, because he's got the numbers. But I'm looking overall. Yeah, I think he's as good as anybody else. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily the best. I think it's kind of a crowded bunch of guys who are doing well. You have to realize also that in the context he's playing in that high run offense, in that high run environment, the runs that he's producing are less valuable than the runs people are producing in other contexts.
That's what I was going to say. If we put him on any other club,
right,
in the Central League, he's a difference maker in the standings, because these other clubs can't score.
Yeah, if you put him on any other club, he's no longer playing for the Swallows in Jingu Stadium.
I understand that, but he's still, I mean, that's not going to impact his walks. That's not really going to impact the fact that he's first in hits. So maybe some of the home runs diminish, but he's still up there so high in the number of hits that he's going to get his share. Now, maybe they might not be as impactful. They might not be home runs, but he's up there. Like I said, he's up there with doubles. He's up there in home runs as well. So maybe you take some of those away. He's up there in walks, top 10 in walks. So, yeah. I mean,
I see your argument.
Yeah, he's definitely a standout candidate for me. Obviously, I think the press, they're looking at guys like Kazuma Okamoto of the of the Giants, probably the media's choice, and Tomoyuki Sugano, especially if the Giants do well. And I think for either one of those guys to win the MVP, the Giants just have to finish in third. They just have to make the playoffs. But the other guy I think is a good candidate for the media, not necessarily for me, based on last year's selection, is Daichi Osada of the Carp.
Yep.
29 consecutive scoreless innings and didn't give up a run during interleague in three starts, I believe. So that's what they look at.
And the previous and the start before that was an unearned run. So against the Hawks.
Okay. All right. So take that. So yeah.
Take that, dude. No, I see that, but I'm sort of wishy-washy. Maybe I didn't dig deep enough. I was busy looking other places this week. So
yeah, well, I hear you, what you're saying, Domingo Santana and the environment, and obviously the lineup. If people know that he's the big guy in the lineup, they can pitch around him, and what you're talking about, the stadium factor and all that stuff. But the thing about the stadium factor is he would still get to play some games at Jingu.
That's true.
And he would get to play at Yokohama and at Tokyo Dome, and those are all three good hitters parks, essentially. So he just doesn't get to play a lot of games at Jingu. But
right.
I don't think
I don't know. I really don't know what his just since we're looking.
You know how many opposite field home runs he has?
If you ask, not offhand, but
okay, don't worry.
That's not a hard one to find out.
I think he has at least three. And remember, we weren't getting a lot, but I think he has at least three. But they're probably all at Jingu, so those are the ones that I wouldn't count.
Your guess would be four, and he leads the league. See, this is the thing. This is, I think, the Jingu thing. There were of players. Basically, there haven't been a lot. You know, there've been about 20, and seven of those were hit by Swallows players, although they weren't all hit at Jingu. So,
all right,
but there's that. Anyway,
well, I'll venture that Santana has more opposite field home runs than anyone else on the Swallows. So that's
oh, he has right. More than anybody else in Japan.
Okay. All right. So take that. All right. Let's make a two-seam transition. And Jim looked up some of the stats from Rakuten's first run through Interleague as the winning team. But he looked up some stats and compared offensive stats position by position for all the teams. So what did you find?
Yeah, for all the teams in both the leagues. Okay. And I'm going to use the measure I'm going to use is WOBA, which is weighted on base average.
WOBA.
I haven't heard anybody call it WOBA, but it sounds pretty cool.
Mm.
WOBA, he's a WOBA. And so anyway, I use that now. A brief explanation is it gives weight to every outcome based on how much they contribute to runs being scored. And then they are normalized. So for example, they're normalized to that year's on-base average. So if you know what the on-base average is for the league, and this year I think it's 311 in the Central League and 310 in the – and well, actually, I'll tell you, league. The on-base average this year is 290. The league on-base average in the Pacific League is 297. And in the Central League, it's 290, which tells you a lot. Because typically, I mean, it's just my thumbnail. My thumbnail is the average for much of the 80s and 90s and 2000s was something in the area of 320.
Okay.
So if you had a leadoff guy who was at an on-base average of, you know, 300, he probably wasn't a great leadoff guy.
Probably not.
but now 300, he's better than average. So that tells you where we are offensively in Japan. So anyway, just with that, so that's how I measured it. Okay, I'm just going to run through position by position.
Okay.
Pitchers, CL all the way. CL pitchers batted 138 to the PL's 060. Wow. Drew six walks and struck out half as often, sacrificed twice as often. This is a true example of better than nothing.
A true example of better than
nothing. I mean, it's a classic example. The PL pitchers were nothing. And the
and that's the way it should be, because often I think we've seen in the past this PL pitchers come in and do better than the CL pitchers because
they have.
So they're so anxious to hit and hadn't done it in so long and want to prove that they're good athletes.
And, you know, and we know Sachi Yamasaki's a hitter, right. But there aren't a lot of them. And then we have a Bay Stars guy who's also a big high school hitter, although he's out of the lineup right now.
Who's that?
Who's that is Hayate Nakagawa. Hayate Nakagawa, the submarine pitcher.
Okay.
So he was so there's the right-handed submarine pitcher for the DeNA who got hurt during interleague, but he's a bit of a slugger too. So anyway, so that's that. The catchers, this is to the CL by a huge margin. A 337 WOBA in interleague to the CL to the PL's 265. I mean, this is like one of the bigger gaps there were. Mostly there aren't, and it's basically the Bay Stars crew.
I was going to ask who were the catchers.
Oh, Bay Stars guys. Good. Yeah, Bay Stars hit two homers. They hit 400 in interleague.
Wow.
The Bay Stars catchers hit 400 in interleague. So give them the MVP award.
No, Mizutani all the way, but yes, good try.
Okay.
No group
CL,
awards.
CL, first base, CL, but close. The CL guys out-homered the PL guys 12-4. But the PL guys, and this is really where we see the PL guys had six sacrifice bunts to the CL zero.
Yep, makes sense.
You know, they've got guys who can fly. DeNA, again, mainly Tyler Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And next was Rockten, mostly Daichi Suzuki, who had a very healthy 364 WOBA. Second base, CL close again, 314-307.
Okay.
But the big team there was Oryx, who were led by Ryo Ota, 469.
Oh, yeah. I do remember him having a good stretch during interleague, but he hadn't had any stretch previous to that.
No, he missed the beginning of the season, and then he's back being the guy who punched the Western League lights out a few years ago. Okay. Third base, Pacific League led 290-260, SoftBank, Ryota Kurihara, although nothing crazy. 341, and then most of the league was down about average.
And may I say that Kurihara is another player who, because the SoftBank Hawks really haven't lost a beat since Yanagita went out, and it's because guys like Kurihara and even Kai, Takuya Kai, and the previous mentioned Kensuke Kondo
and Tatsuru Yanagimachi,
guys like that have really stepped up and come through consistently. Even Kenta Imamiya, the shortstop, hits a home run the other day, and they end up winning on that game. So yeah, I see it. I see it.
Yeah, yeah. Last year it was Taisei Makihara, who was like the guy who came up, and they're going, who is this guy? You know, he looked like Clark Kent. You know, it's like, and this year he's. You know, people go, what happened to that guy who was here last year with a, you know, who was hitting like 350 in half a season's time? You know, where is that guy? He's nowhere. But they've got a bunch of other guys doing it. So, okay, left field. This was the CL also led by, but the best team was SoftBank, obviously, with Kensuke Kondo, Yakult Chunichi. Shun Mizutani was the best player. Kensuke Kondo was second. And then a bunch of big hitters after those guys.
Okay.
Okay, center field, pretty close. Pacific League led 309-300. The Tigers had a slight lead over Rockten as the best in interleague. But the best player was probably Hiromi Oka of Lotte.
Yeah, he went nuts. Yeah.
And Elier Hernandez was going nuts until the Giants had that one game where... He discovered mines in the Yomiuri outfield.
He found them.
He found them indeed. He stepped on them all. And there was that. Okay, right field. This was the PL leading. Again, slight things. Nippon Ham, of course, you know who that is. SoftBank. The best player was Seiya Hosokawa, the Dragons, however, with Chusei Manami right behind him. And the DL, the DH, the PL had a slight edge, although DeNA was the best team for their DHs. But then when you look at the individual leaders, that was a team effort, because when you look at the individual leaders, it was Yuki Yanagita, Hotaka Yamakawa, Tomo Yamori.
The usual suspects. Yeah,
exactly. The usual suspects indeed. Oh, I missed shortstop because I was going to use that line. Shortstop PL by this was another big gap. This was not a big gap like the catchers, but it was the biggest gap among the other positions where offense is almost expected.
Mm-hmm.
PL by a fair amount, with SoftBank a slight edge over Yakult and Oryx and the three guys in that order. So Kenta Imamiya, Hideki Nagaoka, and Kotaro Kuribayashi, who was the guy I thought would be the leader overall, but he was not, but they were close.
Yeah, I would imagine they were all close. Yeah. So yeah, interesting stuff. Yeah, I like that. And you talk about the short stuffs being close. A lot of the positions probably were close, but there was so much mixing and matching. And again, teams decide that during interleague, we're going to bring up guys from the farm who you probably don't have a lot of information on. But the fact of the matter is, the other day I was watching the final week of interleague. I was watching one of the matchups and I was thinking, okay, the manager is bringing in a guy to pinch hit against essentially a farm pitcher, and they probably faced each other. So this is not the advantage you might think you're having in getting a batter who doesn't know a pitcher or vice versa. These guys know each other, so this is not this should be, you know, pretty easy to figure out in terms of the matchup on the mound. You don't have to go back to the locker room and drag up some data and try to get something on this pitcher. This batter knows this guy. So but they'd like to play those games and think that they're doing something.
That happens a lot. Yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing with Anderson Espinoza. You know, he was saying a lot of teams do this. Well, they do it with players. They do it with players as soon as they hit a speed bump, as he did. You know, he had his first bad outing. Then it says, let's see if we can match you up better against another team you've already faced, and you're doing the same thing. You know, that's what happened with him. And then he got a longer layoff, and then he says, you just kind of get used to the layoffs. But as we've seen, you know, I guess Hideki Kuriyama of the Fighters, he was probably the last great champion of, let's hold this pitcher out for this team next week, so we're not going to pitch him this week. And then I want this guy to work on short rest so he can face this team. Just give me a break.
Yeah. Let's just go play. Look at
give that guy a Rubik's Cube or something to do.
All right. One note, no rocking with Roki again this week. And I was talking to Jim before we went on mic, and I said, hey, AP even had a story referencing Kyoto News and talking about the fact that Sasaki wasn't pitching this week and that he had an injury. And I'm like, well, you guys are late to the party, though. Are they listening? I was wondering if AP was listening to the podcast, and that's when they got that report, because that report was old when they put it out. When AP decided to put out that story, it was already old. So anyway, are there any updates on Sasaki?
Not that I heard. Although I shouldn't say that. He could have been activated today, Sunday, against the Hawks, but the Marines said no, won't happen. They expect he'll be ready in the middle of this week. And then Masato Yoshii, the Marines manager, said, yeah, I mean, I expect he'll be ready. You know, he went 2 weeks between his last starts, his last two starts, and it looks like he'll go 2 weeks between these starts, but don't expect that to be a thing, because I don't think it's going to make him a better pitcher.
Right.
We'll see. I will say that some people who are probably getting paid by the article have been busy on a couple of websites writing stories about a potential Roki Sasaki trade, and that tells you that the ball is dead or something.
Trade?
Yeah, I know. It's like it's just, you know.
What?
Yeah, well, I think the trade would be to a team that, I mean, the idea is, well, he wants to leave and whatever and this and whatever. And this is called, there's no real news.
Yeah.
So let's make up some.
If there's nothing out there, we'll make up our own.
Exactly.
We'll just make our own. Yeah, there isn't I shouldn't say there isn't, because the Giants might do anything to win if they think they have a chance, but there really aren't teams out there who would give away young talent to rent a player in Japan. Right. They just don't seem to do that. And you don't give up a marquee player as a team that is in the playoff hunt to stock up on assets for the future. I have not seen that happen in
Japan. No, it's not a thing in Japan because of the loyalty, you know, the group loyalty thing.
Sure. And the fact that, like, I'm still riding on the train on the Seibu line, seeing Kazuo Matsui on promos out front of the team that they made these promos months ago. Mm-hmm. And they're ready to go for July games, and they can't. There's nothing they can do, so they're still on the posters, and they have some video promos that they run on some of the trains now. And there he is, standing out in front of the players. And I'm like, no, that dude's gone. That dude is kicking his feet up and having some coffee, laughing at the TV as Watanabe tries to get the same group of guys to produce that, you know, he couldn't get to produce. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, no, stop that. You guys, you know, somebody pulled the plug on these things. It's a bad look. So no, they're not trading Sasaki. Stop writing that. Stop saying it. Don't even think it. Don't even think it out loud. All right, let's go to fielding questions. So, Dave in Baltimore, via email, he came out to Japan, and we met up last month when he was making his around the country tour of Japanese baseball games. And it turns out we left it up to pretty much the last day that he was going to be in Japan. And he brought his buddy, who I believe lives in Chiba, and his buddy was wearing an old fighter's cap. And I couldn't figure it out. It was so old. I'm like looking at that. Is that for Florida? The College World Series was about to start and all that stuff. But he said, no, it's for the Fighters. And I'm like, oh, okay. I don't remember that cap. But anyway, I left early in the morning for a desk shift and met up with Dave downtown near Tokyo Station. And at that time, Dave had a question, and I said, well, let's record that for the show. So we stepped into this echoey entrance of a building near Dean and DeLuca's downtown, and this is what Dave wanted to ask.
Hey, John and Jim. This is Dave, NPB card guy, long-time listener, first-time caller. And
Caller, I'm standing right here.
I've been on this trip through Japan to a lot of the ballparks, and after sitting in the Alps in the outfield in Koshien and then in the seats behind home plate at Yokohama, I was wondering if there's any actual list of what the worst steep angles in ballpark bowls in Japan are, and if those two are the worst. So thanks, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Of course you will.
All right. So it's pretty echoey in there, but what did you think about that question, and what do you have as an answer, Jim?
I misinterpreted it, actually. I thought it was like, what were the worst seats? And, you know,
easy to misinterpret because he's speaking clearly and you didn't interrupt him.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So go
ahead. Are you through?
Yeah.
Just checking. Still laughing.
Go ahead.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay? So I thought the worst seats, and I got it. And actually, I like, so this is a brief thing. Actually, there's a thing about Yokohama Stadium, and I know some scouts, some people hate the seats behind home plate because you can't see when the catcher catches a foul pop.
Sure, yes.
Because it's the lowest seat behind home plate is effectively the top of a three-story building.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But I, in general, I like the sight lines at Yokohama. This stadium is a concentric circle, basically around second base. Mm-hmm. The area just behind second base. So pretty much everywhere you're sitting in the stadium, you're looking at the infield. You're pointed, your seat is directed right at the infield.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice. I mean, it's just, you go most parks, the seats are looking parallel to the front wall, you know, parallel to the foul line. So if you're sitting down the left field line at most parks, you've got to turn your head at a 45 degree angle to see home plate.
Right.
Okay, so there's that. And then there's my least favorite seats in NPB, which are at Jingu Stadium. Down the lines, when you get down the foul lines in on the infield side, the stadium dips. So if you're in row 26, row 26 is a few feet higher when you're behind the dugout than it is when you're down by the bullpen.
Uh-huh.
So there's a bit of a hump. So you have to not only crane your head 45 degrees to the left when you're down the first base line to see home plate, but when you get pretty close to the bullpen, you kind of have to get on tiptoes a little bit to see home plate, because you're looking over the stands to see home plate. You know, you're looking over people whose seats are a few inches higher than yours. So that's not, I haven't sat there for years and years, and I don't think they've fixed that. Anyway, that's my minor gripe. But yeah, thanks a lot, Dave. I always appreciate your contributions.
Yeah. So I doubt, Dave, since I understood your question.
Sorry about that.
I don't think there are metrics on the ballparks and the steepness of how high they go up, but I'll go off memory. I remember Yokohama being one of the worst, because they put when they reconfigured the stadium and they put the media in the press boxes out. I don't even know where this was. It seemed like it was another building. It was outside the stadium, and you had to climb up these.
It's now you have to go outside the stadium. You used to climb inside the stadium. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seemed like the steps to get up to the very top at the outside or outer part of the stadium was the steps were not only deep, thick stairs, but they had depth to them. So you had to step up and you would go onto the step, and then you'd have to take another step before you actually got to, you had to take a step forward before you actually got to the next step to step up. So it was deep and it was steep and they were awful. So that's what I remember about that stadium. I don't know about the Alps out in Koshien, because I haven't been out there. I just was in the infield and I went up some of the steps in the infield, because I did go to a game there as a fan back in the 90s. And
I've never been there as a fan. Wow.
And so I remember that part. And then Zozo Marine Stadium is also workout worthy because they were putting the media, especially for the playoffs, you had to go outside the media room. So they had auxiliary media for the playoffs. And that's where I saw Carter Stewart Jr. and Noki Sasaki throw last season. And that was awful. Those steeps are deep, and those steps
Tokyo
are deep
Dome
and steep.
Upper deck is awfully steep.
I have only been up there once.
I've been there a few times. It's pretty steep.
Yeah, but some of these places are bad for the hips and knees and everything below. It stresses all parts of the legs. So I don't know, but I just know that they don't want you to get up, and they want you to stay in your seat and stay there and enjoy the game for as long as possible. So they kind of make it that way, I think. But I also think that, you know, the steeper things are, the better the view is going to be. So if you suffer a little bit on the climb up, it just means it's steep, because they stack the seats so that you can be a little bit closer to the field and you have a better view. And that stadium style seating is helpful. So Sapporo Dome used to be pretty bad. I remember that, but they don't use it. And I haven't been to Escon Field yet. Jingu, I actually like, in terms of the steepness of the steps.
No, that's
it's climber
lower body friendly.
Yep. Yeah, lower body friendly. Yeah, Nagoya Dome isn't bad, and Seibu is pretty good too. But If I'll do this for you, Dave. If anyone else has some suggestions or opinions, please find Dave. He's NPP Card Guy on X, also known as Twitter.com. And you can find him there and just let him know about any of the metrics or things that you've experienced on those platforms to help him out and help him know if there are any numbers that talk about the stadiums, because I don't have any. I've never looked for any. I would imagine that there aren't any, but you can certainly offer your experiences and your advice to him. You know, we don't go to many games as fans, although I am taking the family to a game, Jim, on July 15th at Tokyo Dome. It's going to be the Giants and the Tigers. And it's a press holiday. I know you don't know what those are anymore.
I remember them now.
And a national holiday. And so it'll be a day game at Tokyo Dome, which is just perfect. A 2 o'clock start. We can get the kids. They can stay for the whole game. Right. And
they'd be worn out perfect. When they get home and time for bed.
Oh, good. Yeah, that is the best kind of day. But no, they don't get worn out sitting and watching baseball. Unfortunately, they get bored and they might go to sleep. But one of my good friends I used to play basketball with in Nagoya, he came to Japan recently and he couldn't believe the kids don't like sports. And I'm like, they live with you, John, and they don't like sports. I said, man, I have to fight with them to watch the baseball. But they're starting to understand that I have a show. And as many of you heard, they were on last week. And they're starting to understand that I need to watch the baseball to do the show. So they're patient with it, but they don't like watching it. And they go and grab the iPad or something else to play with when the games are on. So I imagine they're going to go to sleep for this game. Hopefully the Tigers and Giants can put on a show for us. So that'll be fun. But anyway, thanks again, Dave. It was so nice to meet you and have coffee and share some time with you. Thank you so much for coming to making time to visit with me and giving us another question. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter.com or X with the hashtag #HighHeat. Send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or go to the Facebook page and leave us a message there. We are on iTunes. I'm expecting today is June 23rd. I have not tried to open up Google Podcasts, but this was supposed to be the last day. So don't look for us there. But there are other podcast catchers you can use. One of them called RSS Radio. So go and sign up, listen to us there. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks, no matter how steep those steps are.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBall Allen. Submit your questions with hashtag #HighHeat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.